Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
There aren't any Jasons 12 and under. That's a dead name.
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
How many kids do you hear, "Hey, Marky"? It might be as almost to the point of Ruth.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
You love that name so much, you don't even go by it.
On 100.5 ESPN.
If you call me Mark, I like my name. I like my name a lot.
The ESPN Wisconsin app.
Wilde and Tosh.
And ESPN Madison on YouTube.
It's Wilde and Touch, isn't it?
This is Wilde and Tosh, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
Are the Brewers in trouble? Yeah, Momoto. They are. Edition. I'm not sure if I've ever seen a game where you're thinking, all right, it's their night. First pitch, home run from Jackson Churio. And then, nothing. Two gosh darn hits. You can't say gosh darn on the radio. Yeah, nobody's listening anyway. I don't have to be Jeff Passan to tell you. They got really good starting pitching, and that seems to make a difference in the playoffs edition. And I'm going to need Brian Bulaga and Matt LaFleur's, or Mark Tauscher's help, and so does Matt LaFleur need that help. How are you going to get the ball to Matthew Golden more? When you're spreading it around the way you do, edition of Wilde and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker, streaming live video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Got another tweet inquiring from Eric about our Spotify situation. We continue to work on that. I am sorry.
Now we're only, 6 weeks in.
You can stuff your sorries in a sack, mister. We'll get it back up, but I'm sorry to keep asking you to bear with us. I'm Jason Wilde in Green Bay. Jesse Nelson, who maybe was right about Freddy Peralta, maybe? Or maybe he's just not quite as good as the two dudes that the Dodgers have thrown in the first two games. Jesse Nelson's in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios. And from his undisclosed location, still waiting for the Brewers to truly get to the Dodgers bullpen, it is the Packers Hall of Famer. It's Mark Tauscher. Tausch, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I think we're all concerned. We're all concerned. Thought last night was a must win. And I think in the grand scheme, it very well might be. I am not giving up, though. I still think this group is a group of persevering young men. And you can't hit this bad, like, for a full series. You just can't. You have 97 blanking, 100 wins when you count the playoffs. Got 100 wins. So at some point, this will all circle back. I just hope it's not going to be too late. But as far as last night goes, it's really difficult when you have pitching like the Dodgers do, and I don't think we put a runner on in scoring position.
No.
And have a guy at second blanking base.
Churio ran past second base on his home run. That was the extent of anyone reaching second base.
Yeah, I just don't like you kind of wasted home field in that regard, because obviously you have a raucous crowd. Jesse was up there last night.
His mom was raucous, I heard.
Yeah, how did mom like the trip, Jell?
Oh, she enjoyed it. The game played out the way that it did, so she was disappointed in the result of the game. But we got there.
She listens to the show. She figured, listens to her son. She knew that was what was going to happen.
We did talk about it on the way in. She took a phone call from my dad at one point in the third or fourth inning, and he said, "Tell Jesse he was right about Freddie Peralta." And she didn't really know what that meant, but then I explained it to her a little further.
Oh, she doesn't listen as avidly as George.
No. My Usher George listens every day. My mom, not so much. She's bouncing.
How come
Mama
doesn't?
She's more of a podcaster.
Because we annoy her.
Yeah. I don't know if I was right about Freddie Peralta, but I think we saw...
What's the deal? Are you afraid of taking a victory lap because you know it comes at the behest of Brewer fans that are gutted? Is that what's going on here?
No, no.
Because you are one to... You always want victory laps. You live for viral moments. You love it. And now you said something yesterday. And by the way, I disagreed with it, but you had some stats to back it up. And your point on not wanting him to pitch game five, I never thought of. I don't know if it's accurate, but it made me think when he pitched down in Chicago. And then last night, listen, man, it didn't matter if Nolan Ryan was pitching for us last night. We scored one run, we ain't going to win. Unless he shuts him out. But
it's true.
I think you have taken credit for much less than what you're not taking credit for today. And I think it's because you know Brewer fans are hurting. Is that
a
fair assessment
line.
Of where we're at?
Yeah, I'll say this. I don't know if Prize Picks is entirely correct when they say it's good to be right, because it doesn't feel good to be right about Freddie Peralta.
So,
but if
he
you
was...
put your money where your mouth was, you would have. And a lot of people do this, Jason. They'll be big fans of the Packers and the Brewers, and they will hedge their emotions by betting the oppo. So at least if the Brewers get gutted, they're walking out.
At least I made some money.
Put $150 or whatever it is, because they hedged emotionally. So Jesse could have done that last night, chose not to, and then he just feels bad about being right.
So all right, he was certainly not as good as Yamamoto was. He certainly wasn't good enough to win. He, according to Lauren, help me out here, the sideline reporter.
Oh, Lauren Shahadi.
Antetokounmpo. I think the Bucks just signed her.
Lauren Shahadi.
So she reported that basically Freddie Peralta begged to come out for the sixth inning. And he was one strike away from getting out of the sixth inning, and then Muncy hits the home run, right? So he, as a quality start, he needed to get one more out and it would have been considered a quality start. But
two
it
runs
wasn't,
six innings?
It yeah. wasn't enough quality compared to what the Brewers were dealing with from the other pitching staff.
Mm-hmm. And I think,
because I didn't think he was terrible.
No, he was a good. It was a good solid start. Like if you do that in July, everybody's pretty content with it.
But it wasn't Don Larsen.
But I think what neither was what's his face either. I'm so sick of that. I hope to God I don't have to hear Jesse Sports Centers again, because I'm sure he's going to try and fit Don Larsen. Hey, first complete game since
Actually, Tausch, Blake Snell and Yamamoto going back to back in the postseason with eight innings, each giving up one run or less. First time since the Dodgers did it in 1983 with Steve Carlton, one of the pitchers on the mound. So we got Don Larsen in game one, and we got Steve Carlton in game
two. Steve Carlton pitched for the Dodgers?
No.
Or wait.
He was a Philly.
Wait a minute.
No.
Let me. Okay, maybe it was. Hang on.
He was a Philly. All right, so Jesse, as you're researching, here's what I think Jesse's point was.
Okay.
Freddie Peralta is a really good starting pitcher. And for us, with our limited resources at this point in his career, because
he's an ace,
you know, he could be making a lot more money. He is our ace. But this is where the discrepancy in financial stuff showcases itself. And unfortunately, and somebody put the numbers up. I don't know what, $162 million for Snell, $500 million for Shohei. I don't know what old boy from Japan got, but it's like $300 mil plus a posting fee, all this other stuff. And I think we're paying Freddie like $8 million a year. And Freddie's been awesome. But last night was where you needed dominance. Your team's struggling hitting. You needed him to be perfect, and that's a big ask. Mm-hmm. Freddie pitched fine. Freddie is not some bum like I think Jesse was trying to indicate, and I'm not saying he called him that, but he was cut. The bottom line is Freddie's a really good starting pitcher, but what Snell did, I don't know if Freddie can do on the same level, and it obviously it didn't happen this time, and Milwaukee had opportunities if they could hit at all, but unfortunately they picked a brutal time. And I love Christian Yelich. I think he's been a great ambassador for the state of Wisconsin, for the Milwaukee Brewers. But he has stunk. No, he's stunk. He just can't hit. And I think you have to at least start thinking about moving him down a bunch. You need to do something to get a spark plug here. I think you got to move Yelich down. He is. It's not close. Like, right now, if he rolls one over to the second baseman, you're happy. Like, his swing looks off. It just, he is not there. And at some point, that's kind of where we're at. And you have to figure out some different ways of doing it.
I saw a stat last night, and I saw Jesse repurposed it today in his rundown, which we all read very closely. 12 instances where the Brewers swung at the first pitch, including Churio, who hit the ball out of the ballpark. But if the idea is to make them throw lots of pitches, and as baseball analyst Mark Tauscher told us, get to their bullpen, that's not getting you closer to getting to their bullpen. Right?
I mean, Jason, we both thought the same thing in our little text string last night. This is like a 1988 series.
Yeah.
Fernando Valenzuela is out there throwing screwballs, and Oral Hershiser's bulldogging people into submission, and you don't even have to worry about it. I don't know who was the closer back in the 88 Dodgers championship run, but we don't even know. We don't even know. The guys don't pitch 8 and 9 innings anymore. Analytics won't even let them, and old Davey over there is like, yeah, oh, you want to go back out there? Yeah, go ahead. And he's just, it was super annoying, and it's.
He's kicking he's himself there. For not doing it the first game.
He's sitting there in a dugout, chewing on seeds, hands in his Dodger blue coat. I don't even know if he got his keister off the bench last night.
Didn't need to.
He was literally sitting there just, it was like a Sunday stroll in the park for old boy. Just a Sunday stroll. We have not done anything to put, other than the ninth inning when he did the one inning that we have not seen a starting pitcher, is the only inning where he had to stand up. That ain't good.
The 1988 World Series, the Dodgers won that series 4-1. Jay Howell was the closer. He had one save.
That name doesn't ring a bell.
He had one save out of the four games.
Can I provide a correction on my 1983 nugget?
Because Steve Carlton, yeah. Lifelong Philly.
So yeah, here's the thing. So I got confused because the Phillies won the series 3-1 over the Dodgers, but the Dodgers through Jerry Royce and Valenzuela in back-to-back games,
Jerry Royce
in games 1 and 2, giving up one run or less. Pitching at least 8 innings. Last time it happened in the postseason, and it was in a losing effort in the series for the Dodgers against the Phillies. How about that? So we got a chance still.
And in 1988, the 4 wins in that series went to Oral Hershiser with 2, Alejandro Pena with 1, and Tim Belcher with 1. So for those
Belcher.
Of you that...
A lot of wins for Timmy Belcher. Ended up going to the Oakland A's for a while with Carney Lansford And Ron Hassey, I think, was a backup catcher then.
Terry Steinbach. Yes, I love it when we do this. 80s baseball.
Mike Gallego. Mike Gallego.
When you get Don Larson and Valenzuela in back-to-back games, this will happen.
So here's what I would say. I would say this for everybody, because everybody's down today. Like, there's no sugarcoating it. It went as bad as you could have hoped offensively for this team. I don't know how it's going to get better, but this is the case where this team was road warriors all season. They were.
Be careful. And you're gonna pull a hamstring stretching here.
No, hold up.
Okay.
And when things go the way they did, and I think there was a little bit of a little hangover effect from the emotional Cubbies win, and you know the Dodgers are a behemoth. They're better. They have more talent than we are. That doesn't shock anyone when I say that.
No.
But if you can just get one, get that game three. All of a sudden, you're not going to be in the jungle. You're not in some hostile environment in L.A. People show up late. They're more worried about wolfing down a Dodger dog.
Nancy Grace.
Get it going and just get two out of three and get it back to Wisconsin. That should be our goal here. And if you do that, you got a puncher's chance. That's all you can hope for as we sit here right now.
Well, nevertheless, if you were viewing yesterday as a must-win, they are going to continue playing the series, even though the Brewers are down 2-0 and have scored one run in each of the first two games. Game three, Jesse, again, is tomorrow. It is a 5:08 first pitch in Wisconsin, a 3:08 first pitch in Los Angeles.
I was listening to Dom and Jerry, my new favorite show, Dom Catronio and Jerry Augustine on Brewers Extra Innings.
Which one's the cat and which one's the mouse?
Well, it's Dom and Jerry. I mean, if you know.
Is that what they call the show?
No, Dom but they should. I didn't realize it until I was listening last night.
It's Dom and Jerry.
Yeah. It's so good.
You can do like little caricatures of them, but make them one look like a mouse and one look like a cat.
So in addition to his role with 620 WTMJ, Dom Catronio works for TBS. He was out in L.A. for the Phillies-Dodgers series, and he said they had a 5:08 Central Time start, 3:08 in L.A. for that series last week, and there was no juice in the stadium at all. Fans were late arriving. And they just weren't into the game. Like, it was all the stereotypical things you would expect from Dodger Stadium for a 3:08 first pitch, even in the playoffs. So, if you want to have any
traffic out there,
if you want to have anything
to
rally around,
Chavez.
Not going to be a hostile environment at all tomorrow afternoon.
No, it will not be. Who's pitching? Q?
Sounds like Glasnow for the Dodgers, and we don't know.
No,
for
I know.
Us.
Listen, man, I ain't worried about them. They can't pitch as good as they just did.
Wait till they get Larsoned tomorrow.
Hey,
like legit
what
Larsoned.
What can we do, Jesse? Since you were there,
I get Nolan Ryan. Next.
What can we do to mix this up?
Steve
the Carlton. The order just ain't working. What do we
can
need
we
to
delve?
Do?
Can we delve into how Jesse would reconfigure the batting order? After you tell us about Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, can we do that?
Absolutely. When it comes to your home, the smart play is trusting Gina Della and her team at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. This month only, you can score a whole house of new energy-efficient Pella windows for as low as $297 a month with zero interest for up to 60 months. That's like a drive you can sustain for years, keeping your home comfortable thanks to incredible defense played by Pella Windows, stopping all of the drafts. Don't wait. Schedule your free consultation today at PellaWI.com.
We have reached a level of dispirited frustration that we are going to give the lineup card to Jesse Nelson and ask him what he can do to reconfigure the lineup to get the Brewers' bats to be awakened. Talk about desperation. We'll see what Jesse can come up with. And we'll discuss a little more. I was taken aback by the level of vitriol being directed at one Christian J. Yelich in the aftermath of last night. A lot of social media people very ticked off. Curious about that as well. We'll talk about that as we get ready to shift gears to Packers and Brian Bulaga. More Wilde and Tausch straight ahead. Stick around.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio. It's a beautiful day. Sky falls and feel like it's a beautiful day.
To let it get away on the road. You got no destination in the mind. He is not the hero we deserve. We deserve better.
So but right now, Jason, Jesse, who do we look at this lineup? Who do you have any confidence in? I got Churio. That's it for me.
Who's the second one?
That's going to barrel the ball or hit something.
Durbin.
At least put the ball in play on a consistent basis. Am I crazy? Is there somebody I'm missing? Tell me.
What about Vonnie?
Vaughn's had some clutch home runs when needed again in the Cubs series. Contreras was up at the plate on
Okay, put Monday Contreras, night. Yes, 100%.
I think there was resounding confidence when Contreras was up with runners at second and third and two outs on Monday night that the Brewers were going to win the game. So,
agree.
Contreras, Churio, I don't really agree with Durbin. I'd probably just say Contreras and Churio right now are the two that I have confidence in getting something done when they're up at the plate. Everybody else, no.
All right, so out of that, who is the one? I have to admit, man, and again, Yelly is a great dude. We preface it with all the right prefacing. But I don't have any confidence he's even going to hit the ball in play. Like, when there's a lefty... It was. I'm looking at like I don't even. And he mentioned it after the game last night. His confidence, and he's in a bad spot. I just wondered. Is there anybody that you'd even think about either replacing him with or at least bumping him down lower in the lineup? Is that fair?
It's very fair.
Through seven postseason games this year, Christian Yelich is 5-for-26. He is batting 192. Andrew Vaughn, Bryce Terang, Joey Ortiz, Isaac Collins, all hitting worse.
Isaac struggled. He has struggled.
Isaac struggles, but all season long, if you want to have someone in the lineup who's going to be a pesky guy if you want to have somebody in the lineup who's going to work the count, get to a full count, foul off a bunch of pitches, and drive the pitch count up, Isaac Collins
dude
is the guy.
Dude threw nine innings and had 110 pitches last night. I don't know anybody working a count last night.
That's what I'm saying. Isaac Collins would be, if you wanted to make some type of change, even though he's been cold in the playoffs, he's a guy who can... He's known
you know who
to
else?
Do that.
I just got a text. Bowers.
Yeah, I was
going to
bring
Bowers
him up too.
In more.
So
yeah, he needs to be more in play.
Jake the Rake.
OPS.
Or Jake the Snake. Either one. We'll take both.
Snakes on a plane. The Brewers leaders in the postseason in OPS. Jake Bowers. Jackson Churio. Andrew Vaughn. William Contreras. Those are all the guys that are over 700 OPS. That's it.
I'd
that's
say outside of those four, I would keep Vaughn, too. This might have been a good time for Rhys Hoskins. Maybe.
Experienced
Maybe.
Player.
Because you right now we need something somewhere from somebody. Jason, you're a wordsmith.
I am. Anemic.
How would you describe the Milwaukee Brewers offense so far?
Anemic. But again, how much of that is them?
Punchless. One of the Academy brothers just said punchless, and I kind of feel that way. Yeah. Although Churio's a puncher.
Look, they hit a bunch of solo home runs in the Cubs series. Like, they certainly had enough offense to win the series.
They hit a couple three-run home runs, too.
They did. My point being is that the last 2 days have clearly sucked. How much of that is them not being good, and how much of that is them facing two guys that were great? I don't know. This is not my game. But it would seem to me that a guy that has won two Cy Youngs, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep.
And then a guy that they paid, you know, half the GDP of small countries to get, were really good. And certainly the Brewers factor into that. And to Jesse's point in the rundown about not working counts and the number of pitches that Yamamoto had to throw to get to a complete game win was not ideal. Those are factors. But is it possible that the other guys have just been damn good pitchers and they've run into two guys that were really good back-to-back nights?
All right. Hey, damn good pitching. Okay. But this is listless. At least let's put – there's – Jason, it's 2 days in a row that you just – there's been really outside of a ninth inning when you finally got to their bullpen – it's been nothing. Nothing. I don't care if they got Vita Blue going with Nolan Ryan, and then you bring in the
Steve
Quiz
Carlton
to close up shop. Yeah, the old great Dodger, according to Gel. Yeah, you've had the – and I know baseball is a game of streaks. I get all that. But we have to figure out some way, somehow, to at least start putting some pressure on. Because that image of old boy just chilling, hand in pocket, spitting seeds, not having a care in the world, can't have that. Can't.
I assume that there has been no further wagering by the dynamic duo of Jesse and Tausch at Hard Rock Casino Rockford on any sort of Brewers prop bets or anything at this juncture.
We have not, but Jesse, I know, has already done really well back from our both May and our June. We have a lot of Packers stuff out there that is looking real good. And you know what else is real good? The Hard Rock Casino Rockford features over 175,000 square feet of gaming and entertainment space, 1,300 slots, 50 live table games, a sports book, and a rock shop, and the Hard Rock Live Entertainment Venue, 23,000 square feet of premium concert and event space. Bradshaw played there. That's how great it is. Features more than 1,000 feet of LED screens to enhance the experience for up to 2,000 guests. Hard Rock Casino Rockford, a premier entertainment destination just off of I-90 in Rockford, Illinois, about an hour from the greater Madison Metroplex.
We're going to be there Monday night for the Barry Alvarez show on ESPN Madison. Oh,
are you and are you and Barry riding down together?
I don't know. We have not coordinated all the travel plans yet for Tarik, Derek, Barry, and I.
Oh, please tell me that you are.
We haven't coordinated
anything. God, would that
yet.
Be amazing? But
I would not give it a. It,
if you do.
It's not a 0%
you have
chance.
To, if you do, you have to put some type of dashboard cam, and we need content with this.
Go that boo would be in a
just
car.
A thing of beauty. Go boo in a car.
It's really good.
We'll talk to Brian Bulaga next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
Wilde and Tausch on 100.5 ESPN is brought to you by Everlight Solar. Save money, save the planet. Everlight Solar.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of. But back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in. But when I go back home, I've got some famous friends.
Our famous friend, a famous Iowa alumnus. I'm really wondering if Jesse got any text messages during his wedding that he was at from this guy. But we need his insights on the Packers, not on the Badgers. With his Iowa bias, he is the great Brian Bulaga on Wildy and Tausch. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Better than Luke Fickell. Almost as good.
The answer is yes, I did get a bunch of texts while I was at the wedding. If you
we
were
never
wondering.
Talked about it all week.
Yeah, no, we haven't. No, we haven't.
We haven't talked about that game at all,
I'm not going to lie to you. You guys might. I'm going to take a beat. I'll let you guys talk amongst yourselves for, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes, and I'll just let me know when you guys want to get back to Packer talk and some other things.
Let's do that now, because, you know, Brian Bulaga takes the high road. That's the kind of guy he is, except in his text messages to Jesse.
Except for one day a year.
No reason to kick us while we're down over here.
So, Blue, you know what, Matt? Here's the deal. We are accountable. It was a beatdown of epic proportions. Blue, were you surprised at all by what happened on Saturday?
I was. No, I was. I was surprised that it went that way. And I, you know, it started with when our quarterback announced that he was starting, that he was going to play. That's kind of when I thought there's a chance that the game could potentially not go that way, but that, you know, it could go in Iowa's favor strongly. You know, we talked about how if he didn't play, that it could be a close game because I didn't know who was going to be playing quarterback for Iowa. Well, when they announced that he was going to play, I was like, okay, there's a chance that Iowa could put up more than 10 points. That's what my thought was because, like, he could move the ball up and down the field more than the backup. But I did not expect Wisconsin to play that way offensively. Like I that was not what I expected to see at all. Like that's, like backwards passes and fumbles and drops from 5 yards away to the tight end that are like 15 yard gains that are like easy first downs. Like that's just stuff that like, I don't expect to see. Right. Like, I mean, those are like the easiest things that had like Wisconsin football should be like doing. Like that's like fundamental things that like I just don't expect to see, right? Like, and that's why it kind of took me by surprise that the game went that way. And to put up no points, like nothing, like I mean there wasn't a drive that besides the one that right that kind of ended where the tight end dropped that little pass that he should have caught, it would have been like a 15 yard gain. Besides that drive, there wasn't a single drive that was threatening. There wasn't a single drive, right? Like, I mean, and that to me was the most shocking part of the entire game. Like, and it just kind of caught me off guard. Like, it really did.
Yeah, but the throw right into the belly of that defensive lineman was right on target. Like, he could not have thrown that ball better if he had been the intended receiver.
That's true. That was a direct strike. That was right in the gut.
For those of you scoring at home.
You know what that reminded me of, Blue? And I obviously, doing the games, you're watching it, and you're telling what you see. But it reminded me a little bit of when Dan Conley returned that kick from New England. Yeah. And there's something about, like, obviously, in both cases, you're on a team or you're hoping a team wins, but then there is the other side of it from a big person's perspective, and you're like, that's pretty awesome. Like, to make that pick, to do it, and then to ramble down the sidelines and dive, thought he got in. He was a half a football short to go pylon hunting. I have to admit, watching it back afterwards, that's a pretty impressive play. I think Graves, the D tackle, was the guy that made that play. It was a pretty fantastic play by him.
It was impressive to see the big fella rumble down the sidelines.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it was impressive to see the big guy go. I I don't know where Wisconsin goes, and I'm sure you guys have been talking about this.
Well, actually,
for a while.
We haven't.
I mean,
We have avoided it this week.
I kind of steered clear of it, Blue. We got Brewers baseball and Pat, you know, and
no,
other
I get
stuff.
I get it. I just mean probably more locally, right? Like and probably a lot more locally in Madtown, right? Like in the heart of
talk. I can assure you of that.
Yeah, in the heart of the beast would be my. On. would be my guess. But, like, it's just, like, I mean, that was my first time watching an entire Badger game, right? Like, that was my first time this year watching the entire game. And I understand now why Badger fans are very, very upset. I get it. I understand. I totally get it now. And until you watch it, until you see it, you're kind of like, okay, well, I mean, come on, why are you guys so upset? And now I see it. I understand. So I'm not here to pile on. I am not, but I pile on Jesse for sure.
When you were Saturday night, I can sure, tell you sure. that much.
He's an antagonist,
that's because it's you. I mean, you're the one who's texting me during bowl season. You're going to score a touchdown. You're going to score. I mean, okay. Oh, yeah, of course I'm going to do that to you.
That's a pretty good Jesse, by the way.
I'm standing around trying to watch the Brewers game on all the baby phones at this wedding, and then my phone keeps going off. It's Bulaga. Yeah. Oh, Hawkeye scored again. Oh, look at this. Yeah. Look at the Hawks go. Yeah.
So of course it's going to be to you only, but to everyone else I'm not going to pile on. To everyone else I'm not doing that, but
that's
to
classy.
You only, Jesse.
Really classy. Very classy.
Yeah. All right. Brian, let's get to the Packers and the place I want to start. I know Tausch has got plenty of questions for you, too. But I am concerned about our guy, Zach Tom. We got two of the great right tackles in Packers history. You guys have been huge fans of him from the jump. He said after the game that he was in so much pain that generally after games he can go through plays and talk about what happened in the game. And he basically said, look, I don't really remember what happened in the second half. Like, he was in that much pain. And my question for you is, he toughed it out. He played all 61 offensive snaps. God bless him. He managed to catch a ball on the sideline that was being thrown away. He caught it, like, one hand with his, like, lineman glove on. It was impressive. He had a good day. How the hell is he going to do this for 12 more weeks without a bye?
Yeah, and that's kind of what, you know, I was talking about and worried about going into this, right? Like, and we, you know, we kind of talked about this last week, right? Like, and Tausch, you and I were talking about it, like going into practice and taking reps, and they give veteran guys a little bit more leeway and how their bodies feel and all that. And that's certainly the case. And he got through this game, but then you hear the comments like that, like, I don't remember the game. I hurt so bad. And it's like, okay, like I hear that, but that makes me nervous from a standpoint that, like, I played through a lot of junk in my day. We'll just put it that way. And like, I could say a lot of worse words than junk. But I don't recall ever feeling that, right? Like, I don't recall playing through something that I don't remember the game. Because like a body part hurt that bad, and I just had to focus on dealing with like how bad the pain hurt. I don't remember what happened. So like, it just gives me concern as his recovery. Like, how is he going to get his body back to do it again and then again and again? And it's just it's and because it's a muscle, right? Like, it's the healing of it, right? Like, and when you've already injured it and it's torn, technically, right? That's what it is. I mean, let's call it what it is. It's torn, and you go damage it again. And so now it re-tears. It doesn't have the time again to heal properly to go essentially re-tear it again out at, you know, in a game. And that's my concern with where he's at and then what he said, right? I'm not misinterpreting what he's saying. What he's saying is it hurts a lot. And it's very painful. So, like, how is he going to turn around and do it again, like you said, 12 more times with no bye week? And that, to me, is it's tough. I mean, listen, I give him all the credit. Like, we in our O-line room, that'd be a warrior credit, right? Like, that's a warrior credit. Like, you get that on the board, that's a warrior credit. But 12 more warrior credits going through it that way, man, that's a lot of warrior credits. And, you know, it's a long season. It's a long season to do that. And I'm worried about him. Like, I mean, I don't even know the guy. You know what I mean? I don't even know him. But to go through that week after week, that's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, I'm just saying that. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot of pain to deal with.
All right. We will get into some of the particulars of the offensive line coming up. I do want you to think about this, because, and not just because I wrote about it. Matt LaFleur, after the game, and then reiterating it on Monday, we asked a lot of questions about Matthew Golden. And does he, you know, do you have to figure out ways to get him the ball more? And Matt LaFleur, I mean, I don't want to say he was defiant, but he was kind of like, are you guys new here? That was kind of his answer. It is what it is, guys. I know everybody wants us to force feed guys the ball, but that's not really how we've done it around here, and I don't plan on changing that. I would like to get
except
your thought.
Except for when Devontae was here.
Yes, but I think it's important to look at, A, who the quarterback was, and, B, who the other guys were. If you look at those 2020 and 2021 seasons, Jesse's guy, Alan Lazard, was the next best wide receiver option. So I think they feel better about their choices that they have, but I want to get both your thoughts on how you get more opportunities for Matthew Golden while staying true to your teamwork makes the dream work, together everyone achieves more approach offensively. We'll get into that during the second half of our time with the great Brian Bulaga, Iowa. Luckily for him, not Wisconsin. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in, but when I go back
rolling
home,
on with I've Brian Bulaga on a Wednesday on Wildy and Tausch. All right, Brian, I'm handing you and Tausch the co-offensive coordinator keys. Matt LaFleur has decided not only to hire you two knuckleheads, but he's giving you the play-calling duties. You've seen what Matthew Golden has done of late. Clutch fourth-down catch in Dallas to keep the thrilling game-tying field goal drive alive at the end of overtime. You saw what he did on Sunday, all three of those explosive gains on his three catches. He has yet to find the end zone, but many of us believe it is time for him to be more involved offensively. How are you two going to put your heads together and do it?
Well, I mean, we all know, at least for me, I mean, we've seen kind of how he's been used so far. And he is obviously he's their big play down the field threat. Like, I think that's not a, you know, question. That's not like a, you know, that's not a disguise at this point. That's what he is. Like, he's a threat down the field. He's faster than everybody. Teams now have to respect that. Safeties are going to play off and back. Like, when he runs down the field, he is going to open up massive space. Like, that's just what he does. Like, and he's an issue. I think to get him the ball more, and this is just like my opinion, like, I would like to see him work more in the middle of that, in the field, like see him work more, in that 8 to 10 yard box, right? Like, see him work more of the slant, see him work more of the dig route, see him work more of not essentially what Dobbs does a lot of, because like Dobbs does do a lot of those types of routes where he does a lot of the dirty work, so to speak, right? Like, where he's running over the middle of the field, and you know, there's something to be said about guys that do that. I mean, that's a tough life going over the middle of the field, right? And you got to get used to that in the NFL. Like, it's a dangerous gig, right? Like, going over the middle of the field and catching the ball. I mean, there's something to be said about that. But there's a lot of yards to be had over the middle of the field, right? And if you get Golden the ball over the middle of the field and there's space, he can make a lot of people miss, and he can go. So, like, to me, that's how you'll be able to find him and get him more opportunities. He's got strong hands, so we know he can catch the ball and pluck the ball and make contested catches. Because otherwise, if we're going to just have him line up, you know, whether that's out wide or something like that, and just run these kind of deep seams or go balls, that's kind of going to be his opportunities, right? Like you're going to have to find him on 25-yard routes or things like that, and those things take time. They have to develop. You have to count on the offensive line to hold up and things like that. So, like, there's multiple factors that go into him getting the football, where if you get him in the slot, if you get him in certain situations where you can hit him on more of those quick hitters, there's less factors that go into, you know, finding him in shorter or in tighter spaces to get him the ball and get him more chances, so to speak. So that would be what I would do, right? And again, like, it seems at this point, his knowledge of the offense probably is pretty good, right? I don't think that right now he's probably very comfortable in it. I don't think they should be worried about overloading him with certain, like running the X or the Z or what. I don't think that should be an issue at this point, right? I think he's probably well versed on all the positions, so to speak. I think he's probably pretty versatile at this point. So that's what I would do, right? And not really like these jet sweeps and things like that, because I don't know. Like, that to me is, I mean, it can work from time to time, but I don't know. I'd rather see him get the ball on an 8-yard slant and go.
They did go horizontally a lot on Sunday, it felt like. Side to side instead of forward, didn't it? Or am I imagining that?
No, they did. I mean, they did. I mean, you have to feel good. I mean, when you see that, I mean, it's like, do you feel, especially once Hendrickson leaves, you feel good about capturing edges. Right, like, I mean, when he leaves the game, you feel good about trying to capture edges and getting around the defense and you know, playing that type of game. And that's how they probably felt once a guy like that leaves. Or you feel good about their corners not being able to tackle or things like that, or the safeties not being able to fly down in the box and containing and things like that. So there's reasons for that, right? Like, there's reasons that you may try to play that type of game against the Bengals defense or a team like that. But I just think if you want to get the ball in his hands more, right, like you have to use him and shift him around in different positions besides just like out wide and running him in, you know, certain routes. Like, I think he could run a bunch of different routes and get the ball in, you know, in different levels of the defense, right? Like short, medium, and long. I think he can be used all over the field and be a weapon. Like I do. I think so, he'd be Blue, a guy that you can. Sorry. Yeah. No, go ahead.
No. Blue. Don't let Wildy bully you here, though. I mean, do you think Golden had 3 catches for, what do you have, Jason? 90 yards.
86 yards. 86 yards. I don't know.
He's a rookie.
You.
No, you're kind of telling him, well, Blue, you got to get him the ball more.
No, I asked you guys to be the offensive coordinators.
Yeah, I know, and Brian is going through a litany of things that he'd want him to do, and my point is there are other mouths, as you like to say, there are other mouths to feed. And by the way, the Pac-Man that I want to make sure is fully loaded with all those pills is Josh Jacobs. That's the guy I want to make sure is full. And then Tucker Kraft.
Yeah.
And after that, then we can start having conversations about who else. Tucker and Jacobs are the engines of this offense. They need to be whole. All these other guys, yes, it's great. The receiving core, I just don't look at it at this point and say, I got to find ways. Now, do I want Matthew Golden to make plays? Yep. I think he is exactly where I want a rookie wideout to be. I'm not counting on him for everything, but I certainly am expecting him to make a big play or two throughout the game. And that is where we're at. Once you start saying, boy, we just haven't gotten him the old Randy Moss quotas.
The Randy ratio.
Or ratios. That is not good. Randy Moss a freak. And maybe Matthew Golden will be on that level. What are you going to do when Christian Watson comes back then? You're going to say, well, I got to make sure I get him 4 or 5 touches.
Well.
Right?
Right?
Well, that's true. The thing. Yeah. Well, so here's my thing with that too, right? Like, and this is not a, and this is not a, because I obviously I'm a pro get Jacobs the ball as much as possible. I think I've been very clear on that. He caught the ball and he was used in the passing game. He was very good in that, you know, with this weekend and last weekend and how he was utilized in total. But I want him handed the ball, guaranteed touches, right? Like those are guaranteed touches when it gets turned around and handed to him. Like that's what I'm big on. And but what we've seen so far, and I get his average running the ball was good, and that as the game went on, it got better. But as we've seen as the season's gone on, like they've been putting themselves in positions, unfortunately, that we've been in these, you know, second and long and third and long situations as drives have gone on. So when we get into these situations, we need to be able to find options available that receivers are becoming open, right? And we're not just always throwing the ball 20 yards down the field. I think as a former offensive lineman, there's nothing that drove me more nuts, and maybe Tausch, you didn't mind, but it drove me nuts that we tried to take shots 20 yards downfield when we needed 8 yards, and we could have just ran a guy like 10 yards downfield or 8 yards and got a first down, but we took a shot 20 yards downfield and it was incomplete. So like there's something to be said about, like, I don't know, like finding routes for those guys, like the Goldens, or like when Watson comes back or whoever, to find that happy medium of finding the routes for those guys that they can get more targets in that zone of the field, if that makes sense. I guess that's where I'm trying to go with it. If you're looking to find more targets for a guy like that, right? Then just the three targets for 87 yards or whatever, that's like, you know, I mean, those are obviously big chunks of yardage. So like that's what he is. He's right now just a home run hitter. And I think he could be more than that. Yeah, like sure. I think everyone thinks he could be more than that. But like I'm just looking at it from a standpoint of if you wanted to get the ball in his hands more, it's in that intermediate part of the field. Like that's where I look at it. Like and that's really where I'm coming from with it. Because that's where the offense has been.
That was my point.
A lot, unfortunately.
That was my point to you and to Jason is there is nothing wrong with a first round receiver having 3 for 86. That's a good day. And yes, you're always going to be
looking, there's nothing wrong with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I this is where I think that sometimes media folk get a little bit like their coaches, like that, you know, oh, well, he did this. Well, we have to do this. You just won the game. He averaged 27 yards a catch or whatever the math is on that. That's good. And by the way, it wasn't like the offense. If the offense sucked and you didn't score any points, then Wilding get up, put his coach's head on and say, well, Matt, your offense didn't seem very effective. Josh Jacobs had 150 total yards. Tucker Kraft had two big catches for 40 and a tutter. Like, to me, you're looking at it saying, yeah, offense was spreading it around pretty good. That's pretty good. But old Wilde puts his coach's hat on and said, well, I don't know. Well, Matthew Golden had be pretty good to get him more catches, probably get him more yards. And LaFleur can look at it and say, Wilde, we put up this. We had one of our best offensive performances we've had. Maybe we know what we're doing. And that's, in essence, what he told you all yesterday, J-Dub.
Romeo Doubs with 9 targets in the game. He had 5 receptions. He was also targeted on the interception. Jordan Love's passer.
You want to take some of those and give them to Golden.
Jordan
Love's. I see what you're doing. A little redistribution, if you will. I get it. All right.
So
now it's starting to make a lot more sense to me. Now I get it.
If I may, briefly, because this is Brian's segment, not mine.
The old coach's hat.
I am a firm believer, unlike others who may have asked the questions that may have been if Sam Waterston were involved on Law and Order and not getting ice cream with Evan Cohen at an ice cream shop in New York City, might have been accused of trying to lead the witness. But there were questions asked about Golden, which prompted Matt LaFleur's response. I believe in their system. They do not have a Davante Adams at this point who should be getting 160 targets in a season. I don't believe that, period, Finn. I also believe your point that you made about not only Christian Watson coming back sooner, but also Jaden Reed coming back later. Jaden Reed was pretty damn good, including on the catch he made that he broke his collarbone on that was wiped out by a penalty. You want to get him involved when he's healthy.
Yep.
And so I don't have a problem at all with Matt LaFleur's philosophy. The question I have is there a slight tweak to the distribution where you can say, you know what, four more passing plays a game, we're going to run it so Golden is the first read in the progression. And if it's not there, it's not there, and you keep going. But does he now merit that small tweak that maybe that gets him two more targets a game? That would be my coach's hat on
mentality. I would say this. If you're looking at it and you want to start tweaking, I want Tucker Kraft getting more touches than
that
would be
targets.
My number one.
Right?
He needs
more. Is that enough for him? That's not enough for him either.
No, he needs more, but I'm just not interested in sitting down with my quarterback and saying, hey, we got to find a way to get the ball to Golden more. And that's on you as a schematic drawing up plays. And it's about players, not plays at the end of games. Matthew Golden's made some plays, no doubt about it. Blue, what do you make of the I've seen a little bit on Packers Twitter, the outrage about Micah Parsons being held every play, because let's be honest, the first half defensively, we were what we thought we were, really dang good. And then the second half, it was kind of like, who are we defensively? And where was Micah? And where was this pass rush? Two questions for you. Is Devontae Wyatt's absence this big of a deal? Because since he's been out those six quarters, we haven't been as dominant. Period, Finn. And the other part is Micah, is this just Micah's lot in life that he just better get ready? You're going to get held. You're a stud. Get used to it.
Yeah, I mean, so I think Wyatt, obviously, yeah, he's good. I mean, he's certainly good in it. And I think from a pass rush standpoint, when he's in the game, he's one of those guys from the interior standpoint that can eat a double team, that may demand a double team, right? Like, he gets in there, and from a pass rush standpoint, if he gets into a one-on-one situation, can win easily. So you get him in there, and then you have a Parsons, and then you have a Rashawn and a Van Ness or you know, whoever it may be on the edges, and Wyatt's in there on the interior. He's a guy that may demand a double team. So then that takes away a thought process of potentially sliding out a guard then to Parsons or whoever that is. And that's another body then you have to send out there to the defensive end, right? I mean, it's more schematics that offensive coordinators then have to come up with. It's less guys out in a route. There's a lot that goes into it then if a guy like Wyatt is in there. Because before he got hurt, he was having a nice season, not just stopping the run, but also rushing the passer. He was very effective, pushing the pocket, beating guys one-on-one as well. So he was having, again, a very nice season. And obviously stopping the run, he was great. Not that the Bengals ran the ball well, but, you know, from just stopping the run standpoint, he was very good. Mm-hmm. And from Micah, like, I watched the game and I watched it back. And, yeah, I mean, yes, he's getting mugged. He's getting mugged.
He gets help.
And, like,
Yeah, it
like
happens.
Yes, that's it's happening. And like, listen, I don't have many words to like make anyone feel better about it. I certainly don't have any words to make him feel better about it. It's going to happen. You're one of the best pass rushers in the league, and that's what's going to happen to you when you get left one on one. And he was left one on one a couple times, and when he did get left one on one, he got mauled. And like, they weren't clean blocks. He got grabbed around the top of the shoulder pads and hugged and pulled and tugged, like clean holdings. Like, and like, that's the thing. Like, we hold every play.
Clean,
like, that's
holdings.
What pass blocking. Yeah. Like, pass blocking is holding, but like, then there's like holding. And those were like holding holdings. Like, so like, that's what he's getting almost every play when he's left one-on-one. So like, and you're not going to get the flag thrown every time for you. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like the refs won't do it. So he's just going to have to get used to that. Like, that's life. And I understand, like, Packers fans want, like, a sack or two a game from him. Like, but it's just, it's going to be tough. It really is. Like, and when he's not left one-on-one, he's getting double team or triple team. But, like, you watch his game and how he played. The dude, like, had, like, five or six pressures. He was impacting, like, Flacco as he was rushing and was, like, pressuring the pocket and was on Flacco, like, very quickly when he could, like, constantly. Like, he's there. Like, he is constantly in the presence of the quarterback and making that quarterback speed up his timing, right? Like, he's it's going to be a point in time in this season that he's going to have a game where he goes off.
He's a menace.
Yeah, that he goes up. Yeah, he's going to go off for three or four sacks in a game. Like, it's going to it is going to happen, and everyone's going to go, like, okay, like, there's that guy. That's a bad man. Like, it's going to happen.
Lou,
it's just a matter of time.
Do you think that LaFleur should just send in all the videos? And because you're right, man. I mean, I'm going to sit here. We do hold every play. And, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this. This is a great line that when the refs would come in as young players, we'd sit there and ask. And a ref would always tell you as an O-lineman, if your feet aren't beat, we're not going to call it. If you can keep your feet in front of them, you can bear hug a little bit, and then you just try to shift your hands back in. But if you can keep your feet in front and don't get, you know, when they do a rip and you're behind him and you're kind of pulling, that's when you're going to get called. And there were some of those with Micah. Yeah. And you're not – I don't want officials calling holdings every play. But if you are tackling him or you're behind him and, like, grabbing his jersey, pulling him backwards or – kind of doing a headlock, you have to call some of them. And I'm sure Micah, Cowboys fans have been kind of text or tweeting at Packer fans saying, hey, this is part of the deal. And I'm sure Micah, like Myles Garrett and TJ Watt and a lot of these guys, this is just the things that you have to deal with as a stud pass rusher in this league.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Matt, you got to send him in. You got to show, like, this is what's happening. And I'm sure Mike is getting frustrated. But he's been dealing with this, right? I mean, this is something that you deal with as a great pass rusher year to year, right? Like, I mean, this is what happens. And, that's what we're taught as tackles, right? Like, don't have your feet get beat and you won't get called for holding. But, like, what's happening to him right now is exactly what you said. Like, he's ripping around the edge and tackles are, like, on his back number. Like, so that would be the number that is, you know, essentially the line of scrimmage number and are behind him and are pulling him back. Like, it's like they're beat. Their feet are beat and they're not getting, he's not getting the flags. And like with how quick he is, it happens so fast. Like he beats tackles so fast that I think
almost
sometimes.
So why?
Yeah.
That
why? I think some,
I don't understand you guys. I appreciate you both admitting that you were guilty of holding even when you weren't called for it at times. But what's the reason that they wouldn't, like, I'm not here to be a homer, but if you look at some of the Johnny montages of instances where he is blatantly held and there is no flag, what is the reluctance on the officiating crew's part of throwing the flags in those instances? Just that it would be happening so frequently because he's had that many wins? Like, why would they be reluctant to throw a flag on a clearly obvious hold on a elite player?
I think there's a couple things. Like, sometimes the ref may think it won't impact the play, like the ball's been thrown, right? Like, because that's a lot of the times that is what's happening right now because of the Parsons effect.
Right.
Quarterbacks throw the ball really fast, right? Like, they are getting rid of the ball really fast. So by the time he is beating a tackle, which is what we just said, he beats them so fast, these quarterbacks are throwing the ball, but they're holding him. But the refs think, he wasn't. I mean, the quarterback's throwing the ball by now, and by the chant, you know, it's not going to impact the play. So we're just going to let that one go, and not throw the flag. So, like, I think that's more the case than it's like we're not going to give him the flag. Like, I think that's more of it than – because I think if the quarterback holds it for another second, he gets the flag, because then Micah continues his pass rush. The quarterback still has it, and there's more of a chance of a sack than there is not, right? So I think it's – I mean, it's more of like a detriment of who he is than what he's doing to offenses and what he's doing to quarterbacks. But it's also like how good he is and what he does to tackles as well. Like he has that effect on, you know, the game in general. Like, and again, I'm not trying to like sit here and say like I feel bad for him. Like, listen, you're making like $45 million and
figure it
you're
out.
Getting help. Like you're figure getting help. Out. Like, okay, bud. Like hey, yeah. like. I don't feel too bad for you, but like at the same time, like I for the defense's sake, like some of these eventually are gonna like have to get called, right? Like I mean, they eventually have to get called. The refs can't continue to just not throw them. I mean, some of them are so blatant, right? I mean, and like again, as an offensive lineman, I don't want to see them thrown every play, but some of them, like you just watch, like that's a hold, like that's like it's clear. So. Again, they'll get called eventually, but it's just it's the way it is right now. And to be honest, like I don't want to waste all my good graces on the Bengals, getting them thrown on the Bengals. Mm. You know, like let's wait till we go back to Detroit.
Yeah, wait for
or
the Lions
get
up
a
there.
Couple of those.
Yep, yeah. I agree.
Yeah,
totally.
Agree. Let's wait till then.
All right, Brian. Yeah. We always appreciate our Wednesdays with you. I will talk to you tomorrow on the Homer Hour. Until then, thanks, buddy. See you later.
All right, guys. Take care.
That is the great Brian Bulaga. He joins us every Wednesday and makes us smarter in the process. Just like you'll be smarter if, for some reason, you've been injured in an accident and you make the one call, that's all. To Gruber Law Offices, 414-276-6666, 414-276-6666, or go to the website gruber-law.com. For 40 years, they've been helping clients all across Wisconsin. And they'll help you when you need it most. The 10 o'clock hour of Wilde and Tausch starts in 2 minutes. So stick around.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.